Well, it's my absolute pleasure now to be talking with Hall of Fame broadcaster Diane Stern from WBZ Radio and the North Shore. And Diane, welcome to MSO.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure.
It is so awesome to be talking with you and one of the heroes of mine from back in the day, right up until recently, of course. But I want to go back to maybe your career. Everybody knows you from WBZ, of course, as the news anchor. But before that, how did you actually get started? Maybe a little bit of background about your education and how you ended up in radio.
Sure. I graduated from Boston University with a major in German language and literature. I had spent a year in Heidelberg and loved the German language and my father's family came from Germany, so I don't know if that figured into it. But so I decided to major in it, but I wasn't quite sure what to do with it. But I had remembered a conversation I had in high school with someone who said, "Gee, Diane, you have a good radio voice. You should check it out." So that came back to me years later, and I signed up for a correspondence course in broadcasting, so that I would have some sort of a credential when I went out looking for a job. And my first job was at WMLO, Beverly Danvers, and no one had heard of it, so it was very difficult to sell radio time, which was my first job.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how do you sell something that no one knows about or could even pick up on their radio? So that was kind of interesting. But the few sales that I got, I wrote the commercials for them, and I voiced them. So I put them on the air, and that's how I got on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then the general manager of what was then WMEX happened to hear me and hired me to do news at WMEX in Boston. And that was in the day of,
Larry Justice and what was Woo Woo there? I don't
Larry
remember.
Larry Justice, of course, yeah. And Arnie Woo Woo Ginsburg.
Yeah.
All of the kind of big name DJs. And so I was doing news there and, you know, basically, you know, reading the wire. And of course, that was when they had reel to reel recorders. So
I was
physically cutting the tape. And if we didn't have the, you know, the right adhesive tape to, when we made edits, I would just, you know, put scotch tape on them, you know, whatever fit.
Yep.
It was really primitive. And of course, when I retired, we were editing on graphs and so forth on the computer, which was a whole lot of fun. But anyway, lots has changed over the years, and the technology is just one part of it.
When I first started, I was a math teacher at Gloucester High School for about 40 years, and my summer job and my weekend job was at WESX in Salem. So I am very familiar with the old technology and how long it took to do something. And did you back in those days, in the early days, did you ever get frustrated with trying to get a story on the air, but you only have so much time between, you know, your last broadcast and your next broadcast to actually edit things and put stuff together and compile stuff? So did it ever bug you?
Yes, it did. It was frustrating, but you know, I had that same frustration even with all the bells and whistles of the current technology, because there's always something last minute. A story changes, you're interrupted, and it's always, you know, 5 seconds, you're on.
Yeah.
so that was a frustration that I really felt in both parts of my career, when it was, you know, really primitive with reel-to-reel recorders, and then, you know, when we just changed to computers and online editing.
Tell me about how it felt as a young person at EMX, MEX in Boston, and then the transition over to WBZ, because WBZ, as I was telling you, you know, before we went on this recording here, I used to live in Texas. I went to high school in Texas, and I listened to WBZ down there along with KMOX.
Right.
So, you know, the transition from MEX, which was a very popular local station, in the Boston suburbs, to BZ, that had to be a tremendous step.
It was, but there was something in between. I was hired at WEEI, which back in the day was the CBS all-news station, and I was hired to do the mornings with Bill Lawrence, who also worked at WMEX. So we were kind of a tag team in the morning for, you know, several years. And then my hours changed, and I thought, you know, gee, I'm not, appreciated anymore. So I went looking, and as it happens, WBZ was looking for someone to do their mornings because Gary LaPierre, who is a legend, who was certainly, you know, rest in peace, he's passed, but mm-hmm. he was such a legend, but he decided he wanted to do nighttime radio as a talk show host. So they needed to fill that morning slot. And so I moved over there, and that was in 1983, and I was there for, you know, like 33 years. So that's where most of my career was, with WBZ.
The bells and whistles, the frenetic activity that must take place in a place like BZ has got to be stimulating, and your day must go fast. Tell me a little bit about your daily schedule, your daily routine.
Sure. Well, I would get there at my last shift. I would get there at noon, and I would immediately watch WBZ TV because we would take some of the newsmaker interviews and use that sound in the stories that we wrote. So that was the first thing, and then I really got up to speed on what was happening. And with news, as you know, you have to keep moving the story forward. If there is a fire that morning, at 4 in the afternoon, you're not going to say, oh, there's a fire. I mean, you have to move it along. The investigation has found that. Or we have learned that, you know, mm-hmm. there's someone in the fire that they didn't, you know, find at first. You have to keep moving the story along. So much of my day was trying to figure out how to move a story along to make it fresh.
When you...
And, I'm sorry.
No, please. Finish the thought.
Okay. At 3 o'clock is when I was actually on the air. Mm-hmm. The writing for it, you know, certainly is in the hours beforehand. And then in between newscasts, I was writing. I also had a writer who wrote what Mike Epstein and myself. We would, you know, get the news on the air, and I'd just, you know, sort of be bouncing back and forth from the newsroom to the studio. And there really wasn't any time for a break until, you know, just before 8 o'clock at night. It was really, really intense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it goes fast. My favorite shift at WESX was always the news shift when the news director took his vacation, because it would just go by so fast. And so many. Now, one of the things that I find fascinating, and I wonder if you have preferences and so on, is when there's a breaking story, and I'll go back to, I don't know, a snowstorm, 9/11, whatever it might be. You are talking live with people, whoever, wherever they are. A lot of this stuff is, of course, comes in over the wire and all that stuff. But you're talking live, and you have to. You have to think on your feet. So was that a part that you really enjoyed? I'm not talking about the tragic part of it, of course. But I'm talking about the adrenaline flow and getting the information out, you know, right away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thinking during the trial, we had Jay Carney, who's a very well-known defense attorney, and I remember how great there was interviewing him as the trial went on, just to get his perspective. And I did have to think on my feet. I did. These weren't prepared questions.
Right.
I just walked into the studio, and you know, but at that point, of course, you know so much about the story that you have a lot of things to ask. I mean, it's not like you're reaching for, gee, what do I ask? Because you're so immersed in the story itself that the questions just kind of come.
There had to have been times or people you talk with where you weren't necessarily that versed in it, but there are sort of, with your experience and the fact that they're trying to get some information out, you can sort of nurse that and get information out that leads you to another question?
Right. I mean, and that would happen. And certainly, you know, many people we would talk to, and I was also a reporter. And it's just, you kind of have to know how to ask questions without being, rude or too probing, make it sort of a warm atmosphere so that the person being interviewed feels comfortable. I think that was helpful.
The time that you were on BZ for most of, if not all of your career, BZ was the news source. But even before that, it had been, the old AM rock and roll radio station with news at the top of the hour. The transition to all news, you made that at EEI, and I'm just wondering, what was the difference for you professionally, if there was a difference, in terms of being a newscaster at, say, an MEX rock station, going over to an all-news station?
Well, of course, with MEX, which was known, as you said, as a rock station, the news wasn't a huge part of it. It was the top and I think the bottom of the hour, and I'm trying to remember this. This is many years ago. In the morning, I think we did more news, and then, of course, for afternoon drives, there was more news. But basically, it was kind of DJ City music. And then when I went to EEI, of course, it was all news. In that regard, there was more news to do, more news to write, more news to broadcast.
Right.
And they had features, too. I don't know if you remember Bob Thompson, but he was a gardening expert, and we had him every week, and that was fun. So it wasn't all hard news. There were features, and I did a lot of features, on different topics. But then at WBZ, when I got there, it was a music station. They had talk at night, but it was a music station with newscasts at the top and the bottom of the hour, but that changed with the Gulf War, and that's when we became all news.
I look at the Hall of Fame, the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and of course it's mostly WBZ personnel. Now, I'm exaggerating a bit, but the names, Barry Burbank, Johnny Miller, Dan Ray, Diane Stern, Bruce Bradley, Dick Summert, and it goes on and on and on. And I remember when I moved to Massachusetts as a senior in high school, just spending my nights doing homework listening to Juicy Brucey Bradley, followed by Dick Summer. So,
sure.
So to see these names are just incredible. Along the way, when I first started, I think it was my first or second year at ESX in the summertime, I had to cover a fatal fire in Beverly. Had no idea what I was doing. First time I was doing news. And a man named Jack Hines from Channel 5 was on the scene. I don't know if you remember Jack Hines, but he was... everybody did. And I was lost, and he walked up to me, and he saw my little logo on, and he introduced himself like, I don't know who you are. And he took me under his wing, and he said, stick with me, I'll help you get the story. And
oh my God,
I'll never, ever, ever, ever forget that, because, obviously he was there for Channel 5. Along the way, Diane, I want to ask you about a two-way street. Have there been people, and you don't have to mention any names if you don't want to, but I'm just wondering, is there someone who gave you a helping hand when you weren't expecting it or needing it, or you needed it, and vice versa? Were you able to, help a kid out along the way, an intern or someone else? I mean, those to me, they just like, I still tell that story about Jack Hines.
I wonder if that's the same fire that I covered. It was a rooming house fire.
Yes, yes. Yep.
And I believe four people died.
Something like that, yeah.
It was really awful.
So you saw me and you didn't come over to help?
I hadn't been working for all that long.
Okay, yeah, you were kind of busy too, yep.
Yeah, in general, I think that people were really helpful. I can't specifically credit anybody except the people who gave me a break who hired me at the station.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, this was when there were very few women on the air. And we were novelties. And I will admit that certainly helped me, because I think news directors realized, we should have a female voice on it. So, I was one of the few, women who was in broadcasting, and I think they wanted to be on the cutting edge, so to speak.
I have a couple ones about your career, but I'm always careful when it wasn't received too well, so I have to be very careful of the media now, where it's so vast and it has changed so much. It is open to women who want to aspire to actual journalism jobs versus just being talking heads. And how do you promote that with young people? You know what I'm trying to say? The actual journalism part versus being a talking head. And I end up critiquing so many people that my wife says, look, will you just go watch something else? and I'm wondering if you do that as well now.
Yeah, I do. I mean, when I'm, I don't watch a lot of local TV news. I listen to the radio. I sort of skew towards public radio now.
Yep.
NPR. But yes, I'm very critical about how they present the news, their voices, their diction. I'm always pride myself in being able to, you know, hear a radio voice. In fact, it was a guy who was collecting grocery carts at Market Basket a couple of months ago, and he had the most voice, and I thought, this guy should be on radio. So I talked to him, and I wrote down a few places where he could sort of investigate this, at least to start in commercials and stuff, because that was another part of what I did. I did voiceovers, and I still do occasionally now. But I never saw him again at Market Basket, so I wasn't able to pass that along. But that's just, you know, illustrative of, you know, being able to sort of pick up a good radio voice.
Well, I think you know, you point out NPR, and they have fabulous announcers. I'm always interested to listening to Megla Tacoverde in the morning.
That's BUR. And then on GBH, of course, is Mary Blake, who used to work at WBZ, and she's fabulous. She's one of their anchors and reporters. So it's interesting. Sometimes I'll listen to someone and say, why isn't this person just writing for radio? writing, not for radio, but writing for newspapers or online, you know, they shouldn't be on the radio.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know.
So I can be critical.
I'm glad to hear that, because to me it's so frustrating, and I radio has changed so much over the years, and I don't listen to news on the radio as much anymore as I used to. It used to be a constant thing. Now I'm online. I check everything online. I read five or six different. Diane, anything else that you want to mention that stands out about your career? And I know that on the bio it mentions the blizzard. Was it the blizzard of 78? And that's something we all remember. How did you stay on the air? Did you guys have emergency generators?
Yeah, we must have. And Anthony Silva, who also worked at a lot of places I worked at too, and he's also retired. But we were both working at WMEX at the time for the blizzard of 78, and we got there and everything was dark. So we basically worked by candlelight over the phone, transmitting somehow over the phone, and then, you know, the power came back, so there must have been a generator somewhere. But that was quite an adventure, and we had to stay in Boston virtually the whole week. And we were staying at the old 57 Hotel and sharing rooms, and, you know, being the only woman there, I was, you know, sleeping with my coat on with, you know, engineers, on-air folks. It was really strange.
It's like being embedded in a war zone. My goodness. Oh, God.
Kind of.
Now, that's a cool story. We're going to switch gears here, if we may, Diane, and we're going to go to your... But first, before we do that, what are you doing now? Because I know that your voice is heard out there. You do host things. Are you still doing sort of some voiceover work or some audio work?
Yes, I'm doing a little. Of course, the pandemic has changed, but at one point I was the sort of health information person for Tufts Medical Center, and I would do scripted interviews with some of the doctors there, and then I did spots for Tufts Medical, and yeah, that went on for several years, and then, of course, you know, as I said, the pandemic changed that. I haven't been doing that. But I will occasionally do a video or a voiceover for one of the organizations I'm involved with, including the Immigrant Learning Center, where I've been a teacher and I'm on the board there. It's in Malden, and it's just a great place.